I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to The Room Where It Happened. My name is Matt.
My name is Nolan. I'm not going to throw away my shot.
They called me Ben. We are joined with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. As you know, hopefully, longtime listeners and fellow conspiracy realists, we like to do more than just our typical actual episodes twice a week. We want to keep our finger on the pulse of the world. We love your help with this. This is our weekly strange news segment where we look at stories that may not have made the headlines or require some further analysis. We're going to spend a lot of time in Russia today, though perhaps not the way you expect. There is a guy who's still not in jail named Steven Seagal. You might have seen him in some films. He'll be in today's story. There is a guy over in Europe who is being sued for aiding and abetting a possible incest crisis. You heard that correctly. And before we do any of that, Matt, I think there's a story that you and I clocked especially about an unfortunate death over in Russia.
Yes, that's correct. On this past Saturday, as we're recording this, April 2nd, a headline flashed across Al Jazeera that we noticed. It was, Russian military blogger killed in St. Petersburg cafe blast. And anytime we notice that a journalist of any form has been killed, we definitely take note. And this is no different here. No matter what they're writing about or what their political leanings are, we should talk about it when a journalist gets killed. So let's get to the nitty-gritty here. On Sunday, April 2nd, the same day that was posted, at 3:13 p.m. GMT, that's Greenwich Mean Time, 11:13 our time here in Atlanta, an explosion occurred at the street food bar number one cafe in St. Petersburg, that is in Russia. An explosion within the cafe injured somewhere between 25 and 30 people, depending on where you're reading your reports from, because it says 25 were injured in that Al Jazeera article, but in other places it says around 30 people. There was one person that was killed. That person's name was Vladlin Tartosky. This person's real name was Maxim Fomin, but everyone knew him as Tartosky because he had a very popular Telegram channel that had over 500,000 subscribers, around 560,000, I believe. This person was a hardline supporter of the, quote, special military operation or action that Russia is carrying out in Ukraine, also known as the Ukraine War. to most people across the world. This person is very interesting, probably not somebody I personally would have liked or followed. But again, it's important that we at least talk about it because this appears to have been a targeted killing. This explosion appears to have come from a statue that was given to him just minutes before the explosion occurred. And again, this is within a crowded cafe, but the other people in the cafe may have also been targeted, which is something we need to talk about. All right, so I'm going to go down through the rest of this Al Jazeera article just to give us some important stuff. A St. Petersburg website, according to Al Jazeera, said that the explosion took place at this cafe that at one time belonged to somebody we've talked about on this show before, Yevgeny Prigozhin, the founder of the Wagner Group. That is the, I don't know, I guess the Blackwater equivalent in Russia that we've spoken about before on this show. Mercenaries, right? Private contractors, private military contractors.
And prisoners.
Private military prisoner contractors.
There we go.
There you go. So the reason that Tartosky was even at this location at this cafe is because this cafe that was once owned by Yevgeny Prigozhin was given to this group of Telegram users who were very much pro-Russia, pro-war. And what is the name of it, Ben?
The Cyberfront Z movement, or Zed.
Zed. Okay, Cyberfront Z movement. So this group of people controlled the cafe. They would have talks there on a pretty regular basis, and this was one of those talks. It's a little weird having the political connection there to the Wagner Group, right? It does feel like this group of bloggers maybe were more connected to the war effort than a lot of other independent bloggers that existed out there on the planet. So this already makes it feel a little fishy. It makes it feel more targeted. Let's get to the explosion itself, who may have carried it out and why. So a video was posted that appears to show the moments just before the explosion. You can see a woman carrying a package walk up to Mr. Tartosky and hand this package over. Another person, a third person, takes the statue out and shows it to Tartosky, who then talks about it and kind of jokes about it and then puts the statuette down. Then the video stops, at least the one that I have seen. But between 2 and 3 minutes after that statue is placed, like right next to this blogger, it explodes and the whole cafe explodes. So then the question was, on the 2nd of April, when this was posted, who the heck is that woman? Why would she put a bomb in a statue? And, you know, is that what this was? Basically, there was a huge investigation that was launched. And literally over the course of, I think, about 24 hours, there were already some answers.
Yeah, they found the person, or they, in this case, being the Russian Investigative Committee, came out with a statement shortly after, and this person appears to have a story all her own, right? She's fairly young as well.
Yes, this person is fairly young. You can let's just jump over to another article here from CNN. It was posted the next day on April 3rd. The title is "Russia Arrests Anti-War Activist Following Blast That Killed Hawkish Blogger." You can find that right now. If you want
that
to check it out.
That is serious headline writing right there. I just want to point out.
Right. Well, you can see the slant. And again, I'm pulling from Al Jazeera here, CNN, some British sources, other country sources, just to show that the headlines themselves really show the bias.
Triangulating sources. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty intense if you go through this stuff. The CNN article, you can feel it a little bit. So let's see. Let's jump down to talking about who this person was. The woman's name is Daria Triopova. She was allegedly a supporter of Alexei Navalny, another person we've talked about on the show, one of Vladimir Putin's biggest detractors who is currently in prison, was once poisoned. We've talked about all of that on the show before. She was previously arrested at a protest of the special military action and or Ukraine war. And that is one of the reasons, I think, why she was immediately targeted by the investigation as, hey, why were you even there? at this place that is generally filled with people who support the war efforts in Russia. And she also carried the statue that appears to be the thing that held the explosives. It should be noted that when this was first reported, nobody was sure if the explosives were actually in that statue or not. It was thought that perhaps they were, you know, somewhere else, placed somewhere else close to the stage area where this speech was happening. But it does appear, at least according to the official sources there in Russia, the statue was the thing that exploded.
Question, Matt. Now, I've seen this as Daria Trepova. This is a person who has been kind of a known enemy of the Russian push into Ukraine. Is there any history here, or how much do we know about this person, who, for all intents and purposes, does seem to be the vector for the bombing?
I don't know a ton about her. Do you have more information on her, Ben?
Maybe this is for a future episode. We still haven't done a series on Russian assassinations, but I one thing I think is interesting is that the Russian news sources are saying this was a Ukrainian op. Did you see that
they
as
are,
well?
They are saying that. Of course they're saying that. That makes sense, right? Because then the Ukrainian forces are saying, no, this is Russia carrying out a false flag attack in order to blame Ukraine, or in order to, you know, it's just the same thing. It's all the things you imagine the officials would say, right? Well, no, it's you did it because of this. Well, no, you did it because of that plus this. It's going back and forth. There's no real information. What we do have is a statement from her husband, which was really interesting. I'm going to give you just some quotes from him. Quote, she was really set up and used. Over the last day, I contacted her, but I lost contact about 4 to 5 hours ago. This is immediately following the explosion. All I knew was that Daria needed, either for some task or for some reason, to give some gift. I didn't even know what. There is one very important point that she told me several times. She was sure that this thing would allow access to a person. That is, it was not something that should have exploded. Dasha, who that's how he refers to Daria, in principle is not the kind of person who would kill anyone. And then, guys, Russian authorities released a video of Daria being interviewed, or being interrogated, rather, is what it looks like. And she states, yes, I was the one that brought the statue in. Yes, that was me. And they ask, well, who gave you the statue, or how did you get the statue? And she said, I will tell you that later.
Right.
Like, as in, she can't say it within this interrogation for some reason.
Okay, so she is, like, she has been apprehended. She is currently held by Russian authorities.
Yes, she's being held by authorities. That statement was put out by the authorities after they interrogated her. It is very strange that she would say, well, I can't tell you who gave me the statue or how I got it, but I'll tell you later. It's very, very strange.
What kind of explosives would have to be, you know, in a statue of that size to create that much carnage?
I mean, a fairly small amount of C4 would do the trick, unfortunately.
Right, yeah.
It's a mini Trojan horse, essentially.
Yeah, but there are other substances that could cause a massive explosion like that, too.
Sure.
But again, it didn't obliterate the cafe, if that makes sense. It caused a lot of damage. You can see that damage online if you search for it right now. Oh, there was one other thing. There was a witness who was at the cafe who sat next to this person in question, Miss Trepova. And this comes from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. They put out an article on April 3rd, and it says, a witness said that a woman who identified herself as Natsya asked questions and exchanged remarks with Tatarsky during the discussion. The witness quoted Natsya as saying she had made a bust, the statue, of the blogger, but the guards, when she came in, asked her to leave it at the door, suspecting it could be a bomb.
Wow.
This is what the witness says. Natsya and Tartosky joked and laughed about it. Then she went to the door, picked up the box that contained the bust, and presented it to him up on the stage area. He put the bust on a nearby table with this other third person, and the explosion followed almost immediately afterwards. So they were joking about it having a bomb right before it went off.
I guess one of the questions a lot of our fellow conspiracy realists will have is, why would you accept a random statue of yourself as a gift? Tatarsky is kind of an internet influencer, right? Before his death, he was very popular on Telegram. He was also a huge proponent of Russia's current war on Ukraine, such that I think, Matt, he would also criticize the Russian war effort for not going far enough.
Yeah, he really got his claim to fame when he put out a video that went viral, and it's got a horrible quote. I can read it to you guys if you want, but he was at the location in the Kremlin when Putin basically announced that they were taking over these four territories within Ukraine. And his video, this guy, it was basically saying, we're not going hard enough. We're going to kill everybody we need to kill. We're going to loot everything we need to loot. We're going to have it our way, and that's it. God be with you. That's me paraphrasing. But it was like really like it just pro-Russian war, right? That's what it was. And that's who this guy was. He even embedded himself couple times within the military during like frontline action, intense stuff.
Yeah. And then we have to ask if this guy is being sort of a war propagandist on a, I would argue, a street level propagandist, right? He's not an Alexander Dugin or something.
Well, he was born in Donetsk, right? Which is one of the places that Russia annexed. He's maybe got some feels about that, grew up in that way, felt pro-Russian from the start. He's being used, as you said, Ben. Definitely. He was being used.
Point being, he's not out writing things like foundations of geopolitics. It's strange to me because the Russian government, if I understand correctly, is saying the Ukrainian forces conducted an assassination. Is that correct? Is that what the state arms are saying?
Yes. But they're also trying to connect this person that they've picked up directly to Navalny, which is interesting. Ooh. So that's not necessarily, that doesn't have anything to do with Ukraine necessarily. So it's really, it appears the Kremlin is just trying to apply it to anybody that could be potentially opposing them. Mm-hmm. In this case, it would be Russian citizens within the country who are fighting against the war movement and potentially making them the bad guy, right?
Yeah, still not the number one killer of dissidents in Russia, which is, of course, the notorious third story window.
There you go. And I guess that's where we have to end it, because is that what's actually happening, or was it a false flag from Russia to make these things happen, or was it something else? Who knows? We'll have to keep watching to find out more. Yeah, wow. Let's hear a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with more strange news.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets
that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned. This is an interesting story. It is a story that unfortunately may hit home with a lot of people in our audience today. You guys know about sperm banks, right? Everybody knows what a sperm bank is. How would you describe it to someone who's never heard of it?
I've always been a little foggy. Are you selling it? Is it like selling your plasma? Being a donor doesn't necessarily mean you're giving it for free, right? The term donor is a little misleading there, right?
Yes. A sperm bank clinic essentially exists to liaise between people who have viable sperm and people who want to have a kid, right? Or create a family. To your question, in some cases, in many cases, there is a fee paid for donating sperm, right? And there are also any number of options regarding if and how a future child resulting from that transaction may be able to contact their biological father. In the case of like a plasma bank, you're probably not going to meet the people to whom you're donating blood. But in the case of sperm donation, then it is possible that several decades or years down the road, you will meet someone who is your biological offspring if you have donated to a sperm bank.
It is a bit weird. They've got, like, when you go in, there's basically a menu.
Yes.
Like, I mean, are you looking for certain traits?
Yes, there are weird demographics. Okay. There are boutique, I guess you would call them boutique donation bureaus, wherein it might only be people who are members of Mensa, which is an intellectually fraudulent organization. There might also be demographics, right? We want someone, we want a donor who has insert here attributes, whatever they may be. And with this in mind, you can see how the business gets a little murky, right? And also, if there's not a nationwide, dare I say worldwide regulation for this kind of stuff, then it's quite possible to go from town to town, just drifting through the sperm banks. And sometimes people do this if they can meet the requirements, right? You want to be substance abuse free. You don't want to have any clearly heritable genetic plot twist. You can supplement your income doing this, but there will be consequences down the road. This is where the story of Jonathan Jacob Mezier begins. He is currently the proven father of hundreds of children, and the lawsuit is saying that he fathered 550 children. And yes, there's a lawsuit because this individual is being sued for increasing the risk of unknowing incest across parts of Europe.
So, okay. A lot to unpack.
Lot in the headline.
This is what you call sowing your wild oats, I reckon. But taking it to the extreme. When you do this, when you become a sperm donor, again, misleading term, are you agreeing to not do it too many times? Is there a cap?
Yes.
At what point? Okay, but how is that communicated? And how is that tracked?
That's the rub. That's the issue. Because what if you live in a place like Europe where the next country and a new regimen of laws is just a train ride away, you know? And probably like, what, $40 if you go Ryanair?
Wait, was this the same guy that got all the COVID vaccines? Remember that guy? That was in Europe, too. No. And it was a similar grift. I know it's not, but it was a similar thing where he was able to go to other countries, adjacent countries, and do it.
Yeah. Under this is a Dutch national, he's a musician, And under the Dutch government, if you're a sperm donor, you cannot have more than 25 children via sperm donation. You cannot impregnate, just in general, more than 12 women. This is all meant to prevent inbreeding, incest, or psychological problems for kids when they find out, surprise, you're not an only child. We're pulling a lot of this from some great sources that are, they're all ultimately reporting a London Times article, but you can find the information pretty easily. Our boy, Jonathan Jacob, not Jingleheimer Schmidt, has already gotten in trouble for this. In 2017, a ban went out against him because he had fathered 102 children. Now, this individual lives in Kenya, and he has donated sperm in Denmark and in Ukraine. And a lot of the investigation into this guy comes from something called the DonorKind Foundation, like the word donor and kind put together, in the Netherlands, and they have filed this civil lawsuit against him, alleging that he has actively, continually lied about the number of children he has fathered through these programs, taking advantage of this lack of communication between the different countries, the different programs. I know this is a sensitive topic for a lot of us listening today, and I wanted to ask everybody, should it be illegal to donate material like this at this level?
The gene pool thing certainly sets off some alarm bells. Because, I mean, if there were no checks on it, conceivably, someone could do serious damage to, like, a population over time, right?
Yeah, we shouldn't do this. I do have a solution, though.
Hmm.
We take somebody like Jacob and, like, what's his name? Jan Karbat, that I think we've mentioned in passing before.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't we? That was another Dutch dude. He like ran a sperm clinic and he fathered like 90 people.
Right.
Same kind of deal. Take these guys, get that sperm, that amazing sperm that they have.
It's not amazing. It's just regular sperm. They're just regular people.
Well, now I was just reading how 1 in 6 people are infertile now that walk around on this planet. 1 in 6 people are infertile, which, you know, this isn't regular sperm. This is kind of super sperm. Let's save it all up. Let's bank that stuff. And,
what are
you know,
this guy's agent?
When an apocalypse happens, come on, we can repop. We can repop with these guys.
Get a bunch of John Jacobs.
Yeah, let's repopping. Do it.
So look, with the right amount of deception, it turns out anybody can be their own personal Genghis Khan, right? But the issue here is one of, dare I say, personal responsibility. I mean, ethics are notoriously difficult to enforce. It sounds like a lot of the people who were partnering with these sperm banks, right, to have a child, a lot of them weren't informed that this would be one of 99 kids or one of insert hundreds here. And that feels like important information to have, does it not?
Yeah,
it does. It very much does. And, you know, we were talking a little bit off air about how an anonymous colleague, friend of ours has done this, not this many times, but a significant number of times, and how this individual was able to find out that exact number. Because, I mean, presumably, you know, there are maybe a sample wasn't viable or something like that. Or every time you donate, it doesn't necessarily mean a child will be born, does it?
So well, if you're a Jacob or one of these other guys, then yeah. You know.
Okay, well, he's got that Method Man sperm. But, like, I just think it's odd to be able to get that kind of information. I mean, it almost seems like one step shy of, like, getting names and addresses, you know, like in an adoption scenario, which I think only happens at the behest of the adopted child later in life. They can request some communication with their birth parents, and then, you know, that's handled through the agency. Is there such an arrangement for donor children?
That's a great question. The issue hinges on the rights of the people who are donating these materials, donating sperm, or people saving their eggs, and not just the rights of the people who are on the other side of the equation, But what are the rights of the children? They are absolute bystanders in this situation. You don't get to choose who your parents are just yet. And as someone who has donated in the past, I will say, I get a little freaked out when I hear about stories like these.
Now, when you say donated,
yeah,
no, I'm just joking.
Loaded term. And I do mean loaded.
Let thanks, somebody guys. Borrow some for a little bit.
yeah. Take it around the block. So this is weird to me because I think this is going to be an increasingly common issue. And the current lawsuit is a civil lawsuit. It's not a criminal lawsuit. But I cannot help but wonder what's going to happen. I even read through the attorney for Dorkind, Mark DeHeck, who said they only took legal action after multiple women apparently reached out to this guy on numerous occasions and said, please stop with the donations. Please stop. There are too many of your scion out here. And he refused.
Yeah. He's like, well, come on, this is how I make my money, man. Pay me. Sure, pay me. I'll stop.
So the foundation is going to ask him to do this, Matt. They're going to ask the court to order him to stop donating sperm. And not only that, but to have all of his previously donated sperm destroyed unless it's reserved for a woman who's already given birth to a child that is biologically his.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
But he's donating under fake names as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's identity protection, which further complicates it. But the allegations are the guy is gaming the system. And for many people, families, couples, singles who feel that they have been taken advantage of here, this gets pretty gross, right? Like this, would you consent? This is not informed consent, right? Isn't that the issue?
I guess, yeah. Yeah, that's, I don't know. The issue is just he's holding the world hostage with his
super sperm.
It's just regular sperm. And a lot of these clinics, because, you know, we're not accusing them of being bad actors, but because they don't communicate across international borders, you know, you can say, okay, I'm obeying the Australian guidelines that a donor can only inseminate 5 instances, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then I'll just go to another country, right? And now I'm starting over. It's a brand new me.
I just had this picture of him holding onto his tackle, like the way you would a gun or something in a hostage situation. And just like the world is on the other side. You're like, please, please, Jacob, stop. You got to stop. He's like, you can't stop me.
Like that Dave Chappelle joke about the hobo on the bus. Remember that one? It's a deep cut now. Yeah. There's also the fact that he would write these motivation letters for certain sperm banks, talking about why he was the best to help these people realize their dream of having children. This is malignant narcissism, I would argue.
He just really likes donating, maybe.
Or he really needed the cash, you know?
Yep.
But also, if you're traveling the world and you're still doing this, do you really need the cash? Is it just like, I wish I wasn't fathering hundreds of children, but I need some scratch for the plane ticket.
Well, what it is, you get to a new town, head to the hostel, find out where the closest donation center is, make some scratch, move on to the next hostel, find one there, make some scratch.
So like a sperm carny?
Exactly.
Sperm carny. Great. Okay.
It's what Tyler Durden in Fight Club refers to as setting up franchises.
That's what it is.
So this is an ongoing issue. We've got some appointments of our own to keep, so this may have to be an episode in the future. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsors. We're going back to Russia to learn just like how bad their training is today.
This episode's filled with sticky situations.
Oh, boy.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halper.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
And we're back with one more piece of strange news. Hey, we're going to end on a light note today, kind of, I guess, depending on your take on Mr. Steven Seagal. Boo. He has actually seen a Steven Seagal. He gets the boo, justifiable boos. This is out of the context of today's discussion here, but he has been known to like flash women and just do kind of genuinely gross things with women, and just seems like kind of a, you know.
I'm anti Steven Seagal. I have a clear bias in this.
For good reasons. I mean, these are things that have widely been circulated throughout the years and been reported, about his behavior in those regards. We are not talking about that today. You can have any number of reasons for disliking Steven Seagal. One might be that he essentially is claiming to be a Russian at this point. He is really buddy-buddy with Vladimir Putin. He's been given some very high accolades, one in particular with a very delightful name, the Order of Friendship, from Vladimir Putin himself. He refers to himself as being 1,000,000% Russian. And now he's putting his money where his mouth is, those percentage points of Russianness. And he has opened a training academy for Aikido, called the Typhoon All Russian Aikido Center, where he recently participated in a ribbon cutting with a very, very small ribbon, as Newsweek points out. This is actually not the newest of stories. This is a couple weeks old, but I just thought it was worthwhile because we don't get to talk about Steven Seagal nearly enough. What was the one where he was on the train, and then like there was a sequel to it?
Under Siege.
It was like Under Siege.
No, that's not it. I don't think that's it.
No, that was it. That was absolutely it. It was a train heist.
Okay.
Called Under Siege. There was one with a ship too, though. Hold on a second.
Yeah. Okay. Hang on. There was Under Siege 2, Dark Territory. But in the first, on board the Navy battleship USS Missouri, a group of terrorists used the rouse of a surprise party for the captain, Roos, rather, as an opportunity to take control and start some sort of international incident. There was definitely one with a train, though, guys.
Was it the one where he pretends to be a member of Louisiana law enforcement? Because
that's the real, isn't that the real life thing?
Real. Yeah. It's real the way reality TV is real.
Oh, I'm sorry. Under Siege Part 1 is on a ship. Under Siege 2, Dark Territory, on a train.
Mm.
Also involving, his character's name is Casey Ryback. He's an ex-Navy SEAL who keeps getting into all kinds of sticky situations.
Not even the multiple lawsuits for sexual harassment, assault, exactly, and misconduct.
Yeah, thank you. These are all very real things. It's sort of like what Dennis Rodman did, you know, with Kim Jong-un, you know, where he got real buddy-buddy with him and became this kind of celebrity over there and, you know, making the rounds and stuff. And you got to wonder, like, is it you're sort of canceled in your own country? So you go kind of buddy up with a dictator? Is that the thinking here? Why does he like Russians so much?
Well, it goes back for many years, honestly. He also, even before a lot of people in the United States were really thinking about Ukraine and Russia, he was 10 toes down for the annexation of Crimea back in 2014, you know, and this got him in trouble abroad because he's always loved autocrats, dictators. He definitely supports Putin's version of Russia, and people's beliefs are their own, but he's had Russian citizenship since November 2014.
2014?
Yeah, again, back with annexation of Crimea, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're spot on with that timeline. He also, he is an investor in Russian business. There's something called the Gorky Holding Company that Seagal has a 26% stake in, and was gifted a massive plot of land in Odentsovo district. And this is reported by the Russian news outlet Baza. Moscow authorities actually gave the company 8.2 hectares or 20 acres of land with a market value of 800 million rubles, where the company is intending to build a information center for martial arts. Once again, this is different. This is separate from the Typhoon School, by the way. So back to the Typhoon School. This is what Seagal had to say at the ribbon cutting. I am very glad to be able to present this center today and that Aikido will develop here. These arts can make this world a better place. Buried the lead here a little bit, by the way. There was a statement from the Typhoon Center saying that it was actually intended, its intended use would be, quote, training for service in the Russian armed forces. Okay. And by the way, Aikido is Ben, you're more familiar with martial arts stuff. Matt, I know you are too, with the MMA stuff. I believe that Aikido techniques are used in MMA fighting. That's hard to say. But they are pretty exclusively defensive, aren't they?
It's not really Aikido. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's
what you would call a soft martial art. Like, it's about the redirection of energy.
That's right.
So it's not banned in mixed martial arts or MMA, but it's probably not very common, I would say. Matt, would you agree with that?
Yeah, jiu-jitsu techniques are probably way more prominent, at least fights.
Yeah.
Well, the comment section on this Newsweek article is a hoot. We've got one here from Bill saying, good news for Ukraine, because Aikido is an entirely useless martial art where the demonstrations are literally students performing rehearsed pratfalls. What's bizarre is that the Russian military already uses the highly effective art of Sambo.
Sambo is nasty, yep, man. Yeah. Sambo is brutal. It's also, Aikido doesn't... A big thing about Aikido is you don't want to harm other people. And a big thing about Sambo, like Krav Maga, is the idea of incapacitating an opponent as quickly as possible.
Like punching someone in the throat, like things like that, right?
Yes.
Serious business. Yeah. So, and it's funny. And you know, and look, we're not here to body shame anybody or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, Seagal, when he's doing these demonstrations, he's got a little paunch going on these days. He's a shade of his former, you know, under siege self. And they're a little goofy looking because it does, to the commenter's point, kind of look like the way soccer players look when they get like grazed on the field. They just kind of hit the ground and like clutch themselves and go into a fetal position. Like, it is highly performative, at least in appearance. Another comment here from Fred says, too little, too late. Martial arts is only good for hand-to-hand combat. Did anyone tell Steven Seagal how drones and electronics replace trench warfare where foes are kilometers apart, if not more? Dropping grenades from inconspicuous drones is the new strategy with drone operators skilled, and radio control replaces martial arts. So
that's a good point.
It is a good point. It's not, it's clearly an optics thing, you know?
Okay. So I was going to ask, do you think it's propaganda? Do you think that's like the sole value
of
it?
We got your movie star, America. First of all, you can have him, right?
We have the guy from Under Siege.
Under Siege and Under Siege 2, Dark Territory. Can't even think of any of his other movies. They're really bad, by the way. They're like sub Jean-Claude Van Damme, you know? And no shade on Jean-Claude. I like some of those movies are
Bloodsport,
a lot of fun.
Time Cop, come on.
Time Cop slaps.
Above the Law, Hard to Kill.
That's right.
Yeah, I think, okay, so the thing is with this, maybe there is a bit of nostalgia. I know I've never met Steven Seagal and look forward to not having to hang out with him, just to be, again, candid, because I don't care for sexual predators. But I do understand the appeal, and I don't want to necessarily crap on a stranger if I am just hearing these reports about them, but they seem pretty confirmed in multiple U.S. courts of cases, and practitioners of various martial arts don't have a lot of great stuff to say about him. I mean, they kind of paint him as a paper tiger. I have to ask what the value is there. I saw in an interview, Noel, that he had earlier said, he being Steven Seagal, that he had considered himself 100% Russian. You noted that quote earlier. That's from an interview where he says his dad comes from Russia and he was raised kind of in Russian culture despite being born in the US. So, I mean, maybe it's a sincere thing for him. Maybe he doesn't feel like it's a plot twist. Maybe he feels like he's actually helping.
Maybe. Unclear. But I do want to point out, though, whatever the case may be with his Russian, you know, patriotism, how sincere it might be, he has a hell of a lot of movies with the word kill in the title. Okay.
Right.
He's got Hard to Kill, Out for a Kill, Driven to Kill. Mm. Let's see. Kill Switch. And how could we forget 2016's Contract to Kill?
Yeah. Look, man.
Oh, how dare.
Colorful titles among this film, filmography as well.
Mm. Seagal might be above the law and Hard to Kill. Okay.
You think so?
He might be.
Monster.
But he's marked
for death.
He's
definitely a danger. He's a dangerous man, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's marked for death. He's got a fire down below and he's out for justice.
He's certainly under siege because this Aiki, at least in this show, because this dojo, and he's created several over his quote unquote career. This dojo is, I think, from like Russia state media confirmed this. It's meant to prepare young people for service in the Russian armed forces. So he's not teaching, right? He's not teaching actual soldiers, actual combat. He's kind of doing like an ROTC thing. Is that, what would you say?
It definitely feels like that. Yeah, you kind of nailed it. The last thing is, I do remember this movie. The title still gives me a chuckle. It's called The Glimmer Man with his co-star Keenan Ivory Wayans and Brian Cox of Succession fame, which is back on the air and a hell of a show. Way better than any Steven Seagal movies. But there is a Kevin Bacon connection there. At least one degree of Kevin Bacon. But that's all I got, guys. Steven Seagal. in Russia, teaching Aikido.
Teaching Aikido, which is a beautiful art, right? And as you established earlier, it's not necessarily a wartime art like Sambo or Krav Maga, but we have to see how it develops. Maybe Steve has his own take on Aikido that is a little bit more militarized. We'll have to wait to see how that develops. This week's strange news has been a wild ride. There's a bunch of stuff we didn't get to. So I think, gentlemen, we'll have to do another strange news in the future. What do you say?
Oh, yeah.
Next week, maybe?
What are you, Nostradamus? All right, maybe next week. Let's pull out our Ouija board and check. In the meantime, if you want to be part of the show, we'd love to have you. We'd love to hear your feedback. We would love to hear if you are accidentally related to hundreds of people you've never met. We'd love to hear if you are weaponizing Aikido for a state-level military. And we really want your take on what's going on with the various contradicting narratives about the tragedy there in St. Petersburg. Find us online or other ways. I don't know.
All the ways. You can find us at Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
And if you don't quite care for sipping the social meds, you can talk to us on a telephonic device. All you have to do is dial the number. The magic spell you will cast on your phone is 1-833-STDWYTK. Save the number in your phone because sometimes the abyss stares back. You'll hear a beep after a familiar voice. It'll be like blah, 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 beep. And then you'll have 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes are your own. Go nuts, go ham, give yourself a moniker. We don't like government names on our phones, so we would love a street name. And tell us what's on your mind. Tell us if we can use your name and or message on the air. Most importantly, if you have more to say, then hit us up on our favorite way to communicate. Send us a line at our good old-fashioned email address where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.